Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, good day on April. Hello, can you hear me? Okay. Hello everybody. It's my great pleasure to be here, and it's a great pleasure to see you all. Hello all of you who are giving greetings on the chat. And I would like to welcome you on my behalf and on Deb's behalf to our third free meditation program. And by some cosmic coincidence, this program is being broadcast on Navaratri. We've actually managed to coincide with three major holy festivals from the Indian tradition. And as many of you know, when we practice together on these holy days, we actually receive the benefit of the Shakti vortex that is created in the atmosphere as a result. So it's a really extraordinary gift, and I want you to know it's a coincidence. I didn't set it up like this. But I'm very happy that we are here. And today is actually in America, in the United States, in this hemisphere. It's the second day of Navaratri. In Australia, and I believe in India, it's the third day. But the festival goes on for 9 days. There's several ways of, because goddess is a pan-Indian and now pan-global phenomena. There are different ways of understanding this festival, but traditionally it's seen as a celebration of nine forms of Durga. Actually, Durga in her aspect as Parvati, the consort of Shiva. So today is the first day is dedicated to Parvati as the daughter of the mountain. And someone said recently in a podcast on the subject, it indicates that the goddess is externally hard but internally soft. And in a certain sense, this is a correct indication of the nature of the goddess whom we worship and ultimately fall in love with during Navaratri. She's a warrior form, but her inward being is utterly delicious and filled with sweetness and love. So we can understand that, and we can recognize her in that quality of ourselves that allows us to be firm on the outside, but very soft on the inside. The second day of Navaratri is dedicated to the goddess Brahmacharini, whose quality is as the yogini who dedicates herself completely to practice. And this indicates the quality of Parvati or Durga when she offers herself to do tapas, strong spiritual practice, with the desire to bring Shiva to her, to make Shiva, who is actually her eternal consort, but who, in their mythological form, to make Shiva her husband. So this is an extremely powerful incarnation for us as practitioners. And the third day, for those of you who are in the other hemisphere, in the southern hemisphere, and on the other side of the other on the other side of the international dateline, the goddess is known as Chandraganta, the goddess who destroys demons. So, if you have any demons that you want destroyed, most of us do, and of course the world is full of demons who could use a good shaking up. This is the day to do it. This is the festival to do it. So, today, today being Navaratri, it inspired me to begin our practice with one of my favorite mantras, which is one that many of you have practiced with me before, and many of you have practiced with other teachers, because it is one of the great mantras of the Indian tradition. It's called the Navarna. Navarna means nine syllables, and the Navarna mantra, it's in the chat, plus the syllable Om, which makes 10, is Om Aim Hrim Klim Chamundaye Viche. Om Aim Hrim Klim Chamundaye Viche. We're going to be saying it silently and out loud over the course of and we're going to be meditating with this mantra. We're also going to be meditating with another form of the goddess, or let's call it the formless form of the goddess, because one of the truths that we learn when we study the divine feminine, especially when we study the divine feminine through the non-dual tantric traditions, the Shaiva Shakta tantric traditions, is that goddess is everything. Goddess is everywhere. She's the most subtle. She's the most material. She's rocks. She's trees. She's our bodies. She's our minds. She's our thoughts. She's our emotions. She's our holiest states. And she's also our most difficult states. So we are going to practice with her, with this profound recognition of her omnipresence. And, as those of you who've been practicing and studying with goddesses, and I think there are quite a few of you here, goddess has several different forms, one of which is the physical form, the form of that we see in paintings and in bronze statues. Another is the yantra form, which is the geometrical diagram that indicates her. And the third is the mantra form. So Aim Hrim Shri Klim Chamundaye Viche is the mantra form of the goddess Chamunda, who is an aspect of Durga, and also an aspect of Kali. We're talking here about Durga in her fierce, literally demon and negativity destroying quality. So this is one of the most powerful mantras there is, and a lot of you here have been practicing with this mantra specifically to help you deal with negativities and obstructions. It's particularly good for working with the negativities of your own mind, which I think most of us have to deal with at some point or another. In fact, one of the translations of Chamunda is as she who tears apart thought. And you may remember the story of Chamunda is the story of how Durga, at an enormously difficult part of her battle with the demons Chanda and Munda, manifests the goddess Kali out of her third eye. And Kali then flies around the battlefield, licking up the blood of the warriors, because the demon warriors in this battle have a power that whenever one of them is slain, a new warrior will grow from their drops of blood. And so when Kali licks up the drops of blood of the warriors, she actually prevents them from coming back to life. Symbolically, the drops of blood of the warriors, which resuscitate themselves constantly in the form of new warriors, are thoughts, which are endless, especially negative thoughts. As you know, if you give in to a negative thought, it will bring along its friends. Pretty soon, your entire being will be inundated with negative thoughts. And this is the specific power of this mantra, Om Aim Hrim Klim Chamundaye Viche. I'll tell you the meaning in a moment, although I know many of you know it. The last word of the mantra is Viche, which means destroy or cut or dissolve. So it specifically asks that the veils that keep us from knowing our true clarity and beauty are dissolved or cut or rendered or torn apart. So there's an enormous amount of energy in this mantra, which is energy that intends to liberate us from the negative consequences of discursive thought, and meaning also from the karmas that go along with it. As we consistently dwell in negative and limiting thought forms, they actually become energies in the mind. They form the veils that keep us from really seeing through our most obvious incarnation, seeing to the light that is what we are. So, just a couple of things before we start our first meditation. First of all, this fundamental tantric teaching that the mantra is a for is the form of the goddess, is it's the direct form of the goddess. It's considered the most powerful form with which you can summon, call, invoke, coax, bring yourself into a relationship with goddess. This is a bit of a paradox because we've just said that goddess, in her form as Shakti, as energy, is actually everything. So all words are goddess. It's not like some words are more goddess than others. But, and again, this is the paradox of life. Yet these particular words, these holy words, so to speak, function as a kind of calling to the goddess. And the thing about mantras and deities is that, let's say cosmically, what happens when we say a mantra, when we practice with a mantra, is that the energy that we call deity, the specific energy that we call this deity, which is ever present in the universe, is drawn to this sound because it recognizes the resonance as its own, and then takes root in the consciousness of the one who is practicing with it. This doesn't necessarily happen in 2 minutes, though for some of you it will. But as you practice with such a mantra over a period of time, it gradually creates, it literally dissolves the particles of maya, of negativity, of delusion in your consciousness. And it spreads out through your consciousness so that you are able, by repeating the mantra, to actually bring forth the field of awareness of the goddess. And as we practice with such a mantra, and again, I know this is not news to many of you, but I always like to be reminded of the power of mantra because it helps me realize what a gift it is to be able to practice with one of these extraordinarily powerful sound forms. So when you're repeating the mantra, as it starts to go inward, it starts to carry you into meditation. This is, of course, one of the main reasons why we practice with mantra in meditation. And once the connection is made, you might have a feeling of presence, of sweetness, of heightened energy. For some people, the energy gets very, very strong with this mantra. You may feel physical shifts, like shifts in breathing or tingling in the body. Colors may appear, inner sounds. Some of you may even have a vision. Sometimes when I practice this mantra, I'll have like a partial vision. I'll see the goddess's third eye, or I'll catch a glimpse of one of her earrings, or it will seem to me that I feel her wild hair. The goddess Chamunda is a very wild goddess. She wears an apron of hands. She has skulls around her neck. Her breasts are bare. Her hair is flying outward. She's extremely dynamic, and she actually represents the dynamism of the Shakti in its creative and destructive forms. So, we're bringing her forth. We're bringing her into our lives at this moment. So the seed syllables, again, as many of you know, is literally a it just as a seed contains an entire tree or an entire plant, The seed syllable of a mantra contains all the power of the deity or element within it. And what happens as we repeat it, it's a little bit like dropping one of those Japanese paper flowers into water. You know, it's all bunched up and small in the beginning. And then if you put it into water, it begins to open and it becomes a flower. So this is what seed mantras are. They are seeds that flower into a full experience of the divine. And each of these mantras has a particular emotional and energetic and cosmic quality. So Aim in this mantra, which is associated with the goddess Saraswati, who is the goddess of speech, music, learning, wisdom, and insight, it conveys all these qualities, which are gifts of the goddess. She is insight. She is inspiration. She is creativity. She's the newness and the freshness that is present in every moment when we are aware of the divinity within every moment. So the second seed syllable, Hrim, is the seed of the manifest universe. It's said that by emitting the sound Hrim, the goddess brings worlds into existence. And when we recite the mantra Hrim, we actually draw on our ability to transform reality, to manifest new realities, because in a human being, the human mind and imagination are our closest place of resonance with the goddess, with the Shakti. And so what we are creating in our mind, in our inner world, the imaginative realities that we're creating, not only transform us, they will in time transform the world around us, which is one reason why practices like prayer and mantra have so much power and are honored in all traditions. Kleem is the seed of divine desire. It's said that this universe arises out of the desire of the divine to experience itself in millions of different forms. And the mantra Kleem also carries with it the meaning of divine pleasure, which indicates that this universe actually is meant to be experienced with pleasure, with profound pleasure. So we're going to do our first meditation with the mantra Om Aim Hrim Kleem Chamundayi Viche. And first we'll repeat it aloud. I'm going to chant it in a very simple tune 9 times. I hope you will chant along. As I know that many of you are familiar with this mantra. Those of you who aren't, it's in the chat, and you can read it off the chat. I suspect that after you've done it a few times, it'll begin to occur spontaneously, because this actually is the power of this mantra. I would say that most of us have done this mantra before, if not in this life, in another life. Because we actually would not be here on Navaratri in 2022 about to meditate with the mantra Aim Hrim Kleem Chamundayi Viche Swaha. Sorry, I keep putting in Swaha. If we weren't familiar with it. So just one other thing. We'll go into this later. So find your posture. And we're going to meditate. You can meditate with either open eyes or closed eyes. But as we chant this, as we chant these syllables in invocation, you might want to keep your eyes open to read it from the chat. And inhale, feeling the connection with the seat, feeling it very strongly, so that you actually surrender to the seat, whether you're on a cushion on the floor, whether you're on the couch, whether you're on a chair, whether you're lying on your bed. Let the surface that you're sitting on support you. Just instead of feeling that you have to hold yourself upright, let the seat support you. And then from that sense of support, begin to feel your spinal column rising from that grounded base up through the crown of the head. And we'll take a few moments to walk with the breath through the spinal column. As you inhale, feel that the inhalation is moving into in between the sacrum and the first lumbar vertebra. And then with the exhalation, feel that you blow a little puff of space into it. What we're doing here is actually bringing our awareness into the spine, activating our spine with the breath. So inhale into the space between the first and the second lumbar vertebrae. Don't worry if you can't get it precisely. Having the intention is enough. And relax into this. Imagine that the goddess Chandi, the goddess Chamunda, is dissolving thoughts as they arise. And your attention comes to the third lumbar vertebrae. And you inhale a little puff of air into that, and then you exhale, feeling that your exhalation makes some space. And you move upward, almost as though you're mentally walking yourself up the spinal column, inhaling and exhaling little puffs of breath, making space between each vertebra, up through the thoracic spine, noticing if you feel any parts of the spine that are cramped or tight, just let the breath enter those spaces. And as you breathe out, have the feeling of letting go of tightness, but without any forcing. So many of us don't pay any attention to the spine. So just to let the breath walk us up the spine is actually freeing weeks and months of tightness from what is literally the center of our being from a structural point of view. Your attention rises, inhaling and exhaling up through the cervical spine. Up to the brainstem. And you can begin to feel now the breath flowing in and flowing down the spine all the way to the sacrum, and then flowing up the spine from the sacrum. You're right in the middle of the spinal column, from the sacrum right up to the area of the brainstem behind the occiput in the back brain. Your shoulder blades release down the back. Feel this easy, upright posture. And now let your attention come naturally to the area behind the heart, and we'll chant. Om Aim Rim Klim Chamundaye viche. 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 Your eyes are closed. The upper eyelid resting softly on the lower eyelid. The breath coming very naturally. And you're feeling as though the breath is flowing in on its own. You're opening your body to receive it. And with the inhalation, feel that the syllables Om Aim Rim Klim flow with the breath into the region behind the breastbone, flowing in through the nostrils and down into the heart region. And then with the exhalation, feel Chamundaye Viche expanding through the heart. Om Aim Rim Klim, flowing with the inhalation into the heart. Chamundaye Viche, flowing with great love through the heart region with the exhalation. The inhalation draws these syllables into the body. The exhalation expands them. And as you practice, as you say these syllables to yourself, see if you can feel the resonance in them, the energy in them. So these are not just syllables that you connect with intellectually as a thought. They have an energetic resonance. And the secret of practicing with an awake and alive mantra like this one is to allow yourself to notice that resonance, the way it feels as it mingles with the breath, the way it feels as the breath and the mantra enter your heart, the slight feeling of expansion as though a balloon were blowing up in your chest that arises as the mantra expands through the heart with the exhalation. As thoughts arise, allow the mantra to eat them. This is her job. Whatever arises, it can be welcomed and even celebrated with the mantric thought, Om Aim Rim Klim Chamundaye Viche. Meditate with the goddess in the form of the mantra. Let yourself settle into the felt experience of the mantra Om Aim Hrim Klim Chamundaye Viche as it enters your heart with the breath, with the inhalation, and expands your heart with the exhalation. Let your attention nestle more and more deeply into the mantra, not trying to pronounce the syllables with great articulation, actually slurring the syllables a little bit, because that's what lets the energy in the mantra begin to flow from the syllables into the consciousness of the one who is repeating it, that is, with into your consciousness. And we'll sit for a few moments, allowing the mantra to open us, to touch the different parts of our being. As thoughts arise, just notice. You can say thinking to yourself if you like. Come back to the mantra. So for just a moment, suspending doubt, feel that the cells and molecules of your body are particles of goddess energy, particles of Shakti. This is one of the deepest truths of the divine feminine. Feel that goddess is the blood running through your veins. Goddess is the breath in your nostrils. Goddess is manifesting as your skin, as your bones, as the itch inside your nose, as the pressure of your buttocks against your cushion, as your peace, as your anger, as your feelings of all kinds. There's nothing within you that is not goddess. What is joyful within you is goddess. What is uncomfortable within you is goddess. As you inhale, you're inhaling goddess. As you exhale, you are exhaling goddess. So as I read this excerpt from one of the hymns in the Chandipat, have this recognition. The hymn is addressing you. Yes, the goddess has a transcendent form that is other than you. The goddess also has an immanent form who is within every particle and moment of your existence as an individual. In one of the hymns in the great text, the Chandipat, the triumph of the goddess, the assembled deities who've come to ask for her help ask her who she really is. And the goddess says, I am the innermost essence of reality. From me, both the world and consciousness have taken birth. I am the form of bliss, and I am also the lack of bliss. I am the wisdom of eternal harmony, and I am lack of wisdom. I am knowledge, and I am ignorance. I am unborn, and I take birth as all that is. I am language and silence. I am thought and that which is beyond thought. I am all that is, and I am you. Because goddess has become all of this and all of us, our connection with each other is natural. So when we ask that our meditation be of benefit to all beings, this can become true if we recognize what it really means. That every thought, every feeling, every motion is a thought, a feeling, a motion of the goddess. And that when we join that awareness with the intention to be of benefit and ask for her grace, tremendous transformation happens not only in us, but in everyone. If you need to stretch a little bit, feel free to do that. Otherwise, we're going to go back into meditation. Just notice for now the different components of your meditation, of your experience. Notice, for example, the sounds, that you're actually in a tapestry of sound. What can you hear? The near sounds and the far sounds. It's a profound form of surrender to just open yourself to listening. For many of us, as we begin to listen in this very conscious way, we become aware of a little humming or buzzing. It's almost like the sound of your inner ear, which is also known as nada. And it is actually one of the sounds of the life force. Let yourself welcome all the sounds, inner and outer, and become aware of the sensations, the air against your face, the pressure of the clothes against your skin. The feeling of your buttocks and thighs against the seat. The sensations in your knees and your shoulders. Notice which sensations come into awareness. Notice that there may be some sensations of discomfort or tightness, and at the same time, behind them or within them, sensations of ease and relaxation, feelings of softness. Whenever your mind is drawn to a particular sensation, let the breath flow into it. And notice how when you bring breath to a bodily sensation, it charges the sensation, perhaps relaxing it, perhaps heightening it. Have the attitude of accepting, of welcoming, of allowing whatever sensations are arising. And at some point, you your awareness comes to the sensations of breath. The feeling of breath flowing cool into the nostrils, flowing down the back of the throat. The slight warmth as the breath leaves the nostrils. Have the feeling of welcoming the breath. It's not a thought, this feeling of welcome, it's an attitude. You're welcoming, allowing whatever is arising. And of course, attention flows into thoughts. The thoughts in the foreground. The thoughts in the background. The thoughts that don't form themselves into sentences, but are simply there as a feeling of something arising in your awareness. What happens if you look at the thoughts, if you contemplate your thoughts as aspects of Shakti, not so much focusing on their content as on the energy of thinking inside your mind space, that this too is Shakti. So notice where your attention is. Notice how your attention can cycle from outer sounds to inner sounds to sensations, to the breath, to the thoughts. And for just a moment, ask yourself, what is aware of whatever arises? What is it that recognizes your thoughts? You don't want to get involved in looking for a verbal answer to this question, but see if this question, what is aware of my experience, see if this question can draw your attention backwards to a sense that there is indeed a field of knowing within which all of this is arising. See if you can let your attention rest for even a few seconds on the felt sense of awaring. Let your attention drift. To the awareness that holds your experience and allows you to experience sound and sensation and breath. and thought. That ever-present suchness that is always meditating on you. Meditate on that. That which is meditating on you, the awareness that is the presence of Goddess experiencing your life, experiencing herself as your life. And now, if you like, you can once again begin to breathe the mantra, Om Aim Hrim Klim, with the inhalation flowing into the heart, Chamandaye Viche, with the exhalation expanding the heart. All of this can exist within your meditation. Awareness of sound, awareness of sensation, the primary awareness of breath and mantra, awareness of thoughts, in meditation, you are the witness and the holder of layers and layers of experience. Om Aim Hrim Klim Chamundaye Viche, flowing through the heart with the breath. We offer our practice, asking that it be of benefit to all beings, and especially those who are in suffering or discomfort or displacement. And some of you may like to take a moment and jot down some notes on what this last meditation was for you. We'll just take a few minutes to do that, and then we're going to open the floor to questions. So that little bell, it was just an indication that we're going to move into the Q&A period of our meeting. And we've got a couple of hands raised. Deb is making the choices, so take it away, my dears.
Robin, you want to come off mute?
Hi, Robin.
Oh, hear me?
Okay.
Yes.
We were talking about taking in all the sounds around us. I can't take in certain sounds because of complex PTSD. And I don't know what that means for my practice. I have to even sometimes cover my ears from sirens and mechanical noises. I'm trying to live in a more quiet place. I'm trying to move to a more quiet place, but I don't know. I'm just kind of throwing that out there. Does that limit my meditation, my progress? I don't really know. I know I have to do it to get through the day and preserve my heart from racing. But I wonder, is it holding me back?
Because no, it's not holding you back. I mean, PTSD is a difficult thing to live with. Many of us live with different forms of PTSD. And, you know, you need to do what you need to do. It's the thing is about meditation is that there are so many ways to focus your meditation or even to open yourself in meditation, that if one of them doesn't work for you or is even difficult and painful for you, it's not going to make any difference because there's something else that will be. And I would just say that, you know, the thing about sound, and I'm speaking now not, you know, to people who are not so triggered by mm-hmm. certain sounds. All of us are triggered by certain sounds. All of us are triggered by sirens, not to the degree that you're talking about. But there is a practice where you can just kind of let the sounds be there, kind of include them in your meditation, so that, and notice what happens if you take an attitude towards allowing them, just letting them be there. And I'm not suggesting, Robin, that that's appropriate for you. You don't have to do it. You know, especially if it's difficult for you, you shouldn't do it. But if you focus on the breath, if you focus with the mantra, very often the mantra will, over time, little by little, just begin to dissolve the feelings of PTSD. And you know that one of the things we know is that certain states of consciousness, including awareness of awareness, can kind of hold everything, including the difficult, and allow it to be experienced without so much discomfort. But there's no reason to try that practice until you're ready for it. So thank you for bringing that up. Gabby.
Arshi?
Hi, Arshi.
Hi. I have a more philosophical question rather than practice oriented. Why does goddess always has this paradox? How can we have pleasure in paradox?
Oh, interesting question. Well, we have pleasure in paradox when we begin to recognize that it's the nature of reality. You know, that because we live in a realm of duality, we are never going to have pleasure without discomfort. We're never going to have up without down. We're never going to have youth without age. And the paradox of the goddess is that she actually has become all this. She holds all this. She can allow you to live with the incredible contradictions, the aspects of life that just seem unbearable, without, as it were, demonizing them. And this is, of course, the fundamental tantric attitude. It's something that we grow into. But the real paradox, the ultimate paradox of the goddess, is that while she is all this, and that means the bad as well as this, bad as well as the good, and I know that this is a very hard thing to live with when, you know, you're facing the kind of situations that so many people are facing in life in this world at this time. But she's also the power that can help you transcend it, that can actually create miracles that take you out of difficult situations. So these two, that this is the real paradox. It's all her, and she can also save you from it. She can help you work within it. She can help you have pleasure in paradox. And I would really suggest that at this particular time at Navaratri is a very good time to use this mantra, which does actually contain all the paradoxes, and ask her to show you how you can take pleasure in paradox. Because this is something, it doesn't really matter how much somebody else explains it. At some point, you suddenly get it, you grok it. And that's when you begin experiencing pleasure in paradox. That's when you begin going, oh my God, she is all this, and she's also what's beyond it. She's going to manifest for me as I take real, as I allow myself to be aware of all of it. And she will also carry me away from my mundane understanding of what we think is the reality. You know, there's a wonderful saying in Buddhism, nothing is as it seems, nor is it otherwise. I just think that's such a profound statement. Nothing is as it seems, nor is it otherwise. That's the goddess's teaching. And that's how you take pleasure in paradox. You go, oh, wait a minute. Nothing is as it seems. It may not be the way it looks, but it is the way it looks. So I just offer you that koan because indeed it is a koan, and I thank you for the question.
Thank you.
Yes. Okay.
So we have Sally, we have some questions in the chat. Anna asks, can goddess and Shiva Shakti be interchangeable? If not, can you explain the differences?
Now, the goddess and Shiva Shakti are interchangeable. Goddess is a name for Shakti, and in the, just to answer this question from a philosophical point of view, in the tantric goddess traditions, there's some generic terms for goddess. Of course, she has so many names as well and so many forms, but the two main generic terms for goddess are Shakti and Spanda, and the word Spanda, which has the same root as expand, it's We usually translate it as vibration or resonance, or shimmering. You know, in other words, it carries this feeling of dynamic energy. So the word spanda refers to shakti as energy. The word shakti is always connected to the recognition of actual goddess forms, and shakti is again, it's always paired with Shiva because Shiva and Shakti are they're the inseparable halves of reality. Shiva, the unmoved mover, the transcendent witness, Shakti, the dynamic, creative love energy, which has become everything. So yeah, they are goddess is Shiva Shakti, and Shiva is Shiva Shakti. And there are so many forms of goddess, and they often feel very different. Some of them are beautiful and appear benign. Others are more fierce and warrior-like. But the truth is that they're all benign. All forms of the goddess are about loving you, about awakening you, about showing you who you really are. So again, thank you.
Magda.
Magda, hi.
Hi, so great to be meditating with you again.
So lovely to see
And
you.
since you gave it to me, and I notice that sometimes the clean changes itself to cream, K-R-E-E-M, or
Yes.
to shriek very naturally. And in such a way that I don't even notice it. I will be sitting for an hour and, you know, maybe only after I come out of meditation, I realize that I was doing cream or
Right.
shriek.
Yeah. I'm going to answer your question. You're breaking up a little, so
Okay.
I think that's the gist of your question, right, Magda? So this happens to me too, probably happens to others. The thing is, all of these bij mantras, these seed mantras, they're all goddess mantras. So Kreem is a mantra that's actually specifically associated with goddess Kali. And it really stands for that ability to cut to the truth, to see the truth. Shreem is associated with the goddess Lakshmi. It's the mantra of, as many of you know, it's the mantra of beauty, of gentleness, of harmony. So when a mantra starts to transform itself during meditation, what it means is that your consciousness, or let's say goddess as your consciousness, is opening up another aspect of her great feeling body, and just go with it, allow it to happen. It's very important when you're first learning a mantra to be kind of rigorous about how you focus on it. But as your meditation deepens, because mantra is really there in this instance, the way we're working with the mantra, to take you deeper, to take you into that part of yourself that is really beyond language, even holy language. So if it changes, let it change. And notice, if you can, if it feels right, what the emotional resonance is that you experience with the different forms of the mantra. But they're all Shakti. They're all liberating. They're all loving. So it's good. I just want to say one other thing about mantra. There are certain practices where it's really important to get the mantra absolutely precise. And this is especially true when you're using the mantra for a, let's call it a worldly purpose, or when you've made a decision that you want to actually receive grace for a particular purpose, and you're doing the mantra for that purpose. When you're doing a mantra like that, it's very important to get it right. In fact, even getting the pronunciation right. When you're using a mantra as a meditation, as a cognitive device for meditation. Hello. Hello, whoever you are, can you mute yourself? You know that sound of the baby is very sweet. It what matters more is your intention and your focus. When we go into meditation, and this is my experience almost every day that I meditate, I will go in with a particular focused intention, and as I begin to become more and more internalized, the whole thing shifts and morphs, and I will often come out of meditation with a different mantra or no mantra or just a sense of, being in presence. And that sense of presence is actually the gift of the mantra. It's the gift of the goddess through the mantra. So nothing, no need to worry about changing mantras. If it's happening spontaneously, it's fine. If you're sitting there thinking, oh, maybe I should do this mantra instead of that mantra, that's just the mind giving you a hard time. But if it happens on its own, let it be. Okay. Next question. Thank you, Mo. That was a great question, by the way.
Anne asked if you could provide some advice around how to practice when experiencing high emotions caused by loss, the grief of a beloved pet in a relationship, so many tears,
Oh.
acceptance, letting it go.
Well, I always believe in feeling what you're feeling before you try to let it go. There are gifts in grief, as you know. And part of what we learn when we're going through intense emotions is we learn a lot about ourselves, about our triggers, about the way we handle crisis. And we also experience, deep emotions like grief are universal. So when you have lost someone close to you or a pet or even a place or a job, I mean, there are so many losses that we experience in life. And some of these losses feel really big and extremely painful. Some of them are very easy to let go. And we never know what it is that's going to be really difficult to let go, although of course if it's someone we deeply love, that's extremely hard. So there's a few things I would suggest. One is to notice that grief becomes extremely acute for short periods of time, and then it will back off because emotions are always moving. So if you don't try to push it away and you don't try to cling to it and you don't define yourself as a grieving person, and this is really important, then your grief will arise and it will subside. And there will be moments when you're actually not feeling grief. Maybe that moment when you wake up in the morning and you look at the tree outside, or you hear a beautiful piece of music and you're just there in that and you're not grief-stricken anymore, allow those moments to be there as well. I have found that mantra repetition is tremendously helpful in dealing with strong emotions. But at the same time, so if you're, what you're feeling is grief, anger, etc., injecting the mantra into the feeling will often make a lot of space around it. But it's very important that you not be trying to use the mantra to get rid of the feeling. And this is where the practice of welcoming and allowing can be very important. I also would say physical exercise is really important when you're going through a lot of emotion. So if it's possible to take a long walk or do a little workout or a run or, anything to get your blood moving, it's going to make a difference and it'll help the assimilation process. And I know that when we're very sad, sometimes it's hard to move our body. The body just wants to sink. And yet if you can get yourself to move, it's going to make a lot of difference. So mantra, prayer, allowing, noticing that grief comes and goes, letting yourself feel it when it's there, not clinging to it, not trying to push it away. Those are all ways we practice with grief. Okay, next question.
Dawn. Oops.
Hi, Dawn.
Hi. Good morning.
Hi.
Hi, thank you. I have two questions now. One is about the sound of nada, and the other is about the mantra for Lakshmi. And I've been going back and forth between Om Shreem Lakshmi Bhyo Namaha and Om Shreem Reem Maha Lakshmi Namaha. And the thing that I'm struggling with is the Bij mantras beforehand. So if I recall in our classes together, it's Om Shreem Reem Lakshmi Bhyo Namaha or Om Reem Shreem. Like, it does it really matter which order? Because sometimes that gets flipped. And I know you've said it doesn't matter. And then what's the main difference between those two Lakshmi mantras?
Well, the mantra Hrim, when it's in a string, you know, like Om Shreem Hrim Maha Lakshmi Bhyo Namaha. The mantra Hrim spreads the energy of Shreem. So in other words, Hrim it's the mantra of manifestation. If you could imagine the process of manifesting the universe, the goddess is, so to speak, the Shakti is spreading her light throughout infinite worlds. So it's an expansive, Hrim is an expansive mantra. And if you say Om Shreem Hrim Lakshmi Bhyo Namaha, it's spreading the energy of Shreem. Mm-hmm. And for this reason, I had this long conversation with Constantina Rhodes, who's a good friend of mine, she's written books on Lakshmi, and I'm, you know, Dawn, you probably know her work, about this issue. And I was doing a workshop, I was trying to decide whether I should do Om Hrim Shreem or Om Shreem Hrim. She said, I always go with Om Shreem Hrim, and so out of respect for her, I have taught it that way ever since, with the understanding that it's about spreading the energy of Shreem. But, I have to say, there are many times when Om Hrim Shreem feels more natural, and one reason for that, if you don't mind my getting a little technical, is that in many of the mantras that we practice, that the bija string, the short syllables start with ayim, because that's very much the mantra of beginnings, coordinated with Saraswati, and it goes to hrim, the mantra of manifestation, and then it goes to shrim. Shrim kind of says, this universe is good, it's beautiful, you know, it's auspicious. So we could go Aim, we are inspired to manifest. Hrim, we manifest. Shreem, it's all good. So you can do those mantras, you can do it like that. And it's very powerful and very true. And you can use Hrim as the last syllable, and that will spread the energy of Shreem. So I hope that helps rather than causing more confusion. The ultimate answer is they're both fine.
Okay, great. Thank you. And then just one quick question. So I have this big, beautiful new murti that came, Ardhana Neshwari. And I did what you said, brought the rice and set her up.
Right.
Now I feel like I put Lakshmi to the side and she's been my main goddess. Can they still share the same altar?
Yes, they can
share. All my goddess Lakshmi Saraswatis, they can all share. Okay.
They can all share, yeah.
Okay.
Here's the thing. If you have different deities on your altar, you just want to make sure that you pay attention to all of them. So in other words, you want to do mantras, perhaps the Gayatri, perhaps one of the Maha Mantras, like Om Shreem Hrim Maha Lakshmi Namaha. You want to do mantras to each one of them. And that way their energies kind of coordinate and mix together, and your altar begins to be a really powerful engine of grace for you with all these different aspects of grace. So that's the thing. Don't put a deity on your altar and then forget about him or forget about her. Say a mantra to her every day. Offer a flower, something very, you know, wave incense, but pay attention. So thank you.
And I'll save my question for Nada another time because there's other people.
There's a few other hands raised.
Yeah, thank you very much. Okay, thank you.
Patricia, do you want to unmute yourself?
Hi.
Hi.
Thank you. Hi. My question was, when you're guiding us to pull as we inhale and think of the breath coming into the heart, I always can feel the expansion there. But then when I try to disperse the things and make my heart expand more on the exhale, I feel I automatically identify with contraction because I feel the lungs contracting when I exhale. How is there? Do you have any advice to help me to get past that block, mental block?
Well, the best way to get past a mental block is to just let, is not to try to expand on the, just focus on the mantra and let the breath do what it wants to do. And I can promise you eventually, the expansion will start to happen. But when we have tightness in the breath, which almost everybody does, you know, it's, then certain kinds of pranayama are anxiety producing and contracting. So then, it's not necessary to do this. You can let the breath and the mantra begin to change your relationship with your own breath, which it will do over time. I can tell you this from deep personal experience.
Okay.
Okay. So not,
thank it, you.
It's yes.
That's part of allowing, I guess.
To part of allowing. Yes.
Let go of control.
Let go of control. And also remember, meditation instructions are here to help. You know, I mean, yes, there are certain protocols, certain tantric practices that are meant to be quite precise. And those you actually have to get from a guru who teaches that particular thing, and they will tell you exactly what you need to do, and they'll demand that rigor. For us, what we're really trying to do is find the divine inside ourselves, open to what's already present, receive the grace in the mantras. And the way I teach them and the way my lineage operates is that what matters is intention, devotion, consistency, and practice. And you get to do the practice in the way that your inner intelligence is guiding you, because it's much more important to be able to feel your inner guidance and to follow your inner guidance than to follow an instruction. And this is, you know, there are certain circumstances in which the instructions are really important, but if that's the case, you'll be told and you can struggle to break through your contractions. But in this particular practice, it's all about opening and allowing and letting yourself just relax into your own being.
Okay. Thank you for the permission to relax. And
yes, you have permission to relax.
Thank you. Thank you.
Okay. So we'll take one more question and then our time is up, and I want to spend a couple minutes in meditation before we end. So,
okay. Amy?
Hi, Amy. Lovely to see
you. I'm so glad. Thank you so much. This is worth $1 million billion. It's been just so terrific. Maha Kundalini, Sri Kundalini has been with me for 30 years.
Yes.
And she is at the moment rising very vigorously, higher and higher. When I meditate with Maha Kundalini, or she meditates me, I make the sound, ha, ha. What is Is that a negative removing of in the breath? What comes out of that breath?
What's your experience?
I'm going through some difficult time in terms of energy. Mm-hmm. And I'm feeling, at times I feel that she is protective and she's just fighting the energy. She's as a serpent.
Right.
You know, but I was wondering, that's just my thought about it. I was wondering if in fact she was pulling out the negative components of it, but there is an external component as well. So, you know, I just didn't know.
I think that sound, yeah.
It's not hissing. It's not a K.
Yeah. It's, you know, it's a serpentine sound.
And
it will happen sometimes spontaneously. And it is actually a sound of Kundalini moving through the body and releasing impurities.
Releasing impurities, okay.
Yeah. And you know that Kundalini is often seen as a snake and it's kind of a...
Yeah.
You know, and actually, if there's something that's going on that's very disturbing or uncomfortable, one of the things that I've discovered is that you can make that hissing sound deliberately, and just kind of invite it to leave, like that.
Okay.
So it's a strong, you know, Chamunda sound.
Right. Can I just say one last thing?
Sure.
Thank you. I've been very immersed in the Shakti and the energy of the Shakti, both inside me and outside me simultaneously for 30 years. But what I have noticed recently is that the sounds outside, that I'm listening not to the full sound, but to the vibration of the sound. Like if you hear a helicopter going by, it's the da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da sound, not the whole sound. But that rhythmic sound, it goes right into my heart. It's the same experience as the Shakti that I feel as visual energy and as physical energy. So I just wanted to offer that if anyone wanted to listen to that, if you approved of that.
I totally approve of it. And I actually feel that it's a sign of spiritual advancement that you start hearing the underlying sounds within noise. You know, people often talk about listen for om in the dentist's drill. Yeah. Not an easy thing to do. But at a certain point, it starts to happen. And so it's one of the gifts of 30 years of practice, Amy. And so thank you for that. So we are going to end. I'm really sorry that we can't answer all the questions. If it's something pressing, you can actually email the question to me. And you can send them to admin@sallykempton.com. Deb will get it and forward it to me. You can save it for the next time. But if it's a pressing question about meditation, it's great to be able to answer your questions. So I really love doing that. So we're actually over time. And I know that some of you have had to leave already, but let's just bring our awareness inside. Feel the connection of your sits bones with the seat. Feel the breath flowing downward and grounding you, flowing upward and lifting you through the crown. And let's offer the mantra, Om Aim Hrim Klim Chamundaye Viche, to our own hearts with the inhalation. And then with the exhalation, just have the feeling that you're offering the mantra with all the grace that fills it to the places of trouble and pain and difficulty in the world, whether in yourself, in your personal circle, or in the collective. And of course, you can offer the mantra to all of those in Ukraine and all of those in Russia who are deeply wounded by what's going on there, with the intention that there be healing in that region of the world, which has been through so much grief, and in all the other regions of the world, which in so many times and places have experienced the difficulties and the pain of life, asking that goddess relieve that suffering wherever it is felt. Om Aim Hrim Klim Chamundaye Viche. We offer this mantra with our prayers, asking for grace for this world, for this planet, for this humanity, at this most important time. Om Aim Hrim Klim Chamundaye Viche. I invite you to practice with this mantra for the rest of the day and for longer if you're drawn to it. And just know that today, tomorrow, for the next, let's assume you're in the Northern Hemisphere, for the next week, you have full access to this particularly powerful form of grace through the mantra and through the vortex of energy that is being unleashed all over the world. And just know that in India, right now, people are doing fire rituals, yajnas, using this mantra and chanting the text that it comes from. And as we say it, we are actually part of those rituals which are done for the well-being of humanity and for the well-being of the planet. So it's a very beautiful activity to chant the Navarna mantra, the nine-syllable mantra to the goddess Chamundi during Navaratri. Thank you so much for being with us. Have a beautiful rest of your day and night. And let's just open up our sound and say goodbye.
Bye.
Thank you.
Bye.
Thank you.
Bye.